Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show podcast on the Cross Global Media Radio Network. Visit cgmradio.com/Bob to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Okay, my friend, if you're looking carefully at the title, you do see a part three written. You know what it means when you read part three? It means you might want to listen to parts one and two first. That sounds pretty basic, doesn't it? You'd be surprised how few people know this. Look at the way we study scripture. There were no verses and chapters in the original manuscripts of the Bible, but our translators, bless their hearts, sometimes they start an entire chapter right in the middle of a sentence. When the chapter begins, therefore, what's the question you want to ask yourself? Therefore what? Well, therefore, whatever he was talking about in the last chapter, which wasn't really a chapter anyway, not just with the Bible, this goes on all the time with context. The argument that I'm giving is a very simple one. It's so simple, people don't get it. Often that is because they're not thinking of the grand picture, the context. So just a tiny bit of review from yesterday. Here's where we are. We're talking about a certain kind of evidence for the existence of some kind of God, whether or not he's the God of the Bible, a separate discussion. Some kind of God, a philosophical argument for the existence of God. And since there are all kinds of different philosophical systems as well, this is rational philosophy. I would call this a rational argument for the existence of God. And up to now, we've been studying the human conscience. I left off yesterday saying the human conscience will condemn any individual who fails to treat his fellow man with respect and love. And this awareness of how we should treat our fellow man supports the certainty of human value. Value could not be authentic apart from a universal purpose. We go from the conscience to its testimony of morality, to value, to purpose, to a God who established this purpose. At this point, my skeptical friends usually kick in, "Hold on, Bob, this is sliding by just a little bit too fast. Let's back up a minute. The conscience seems to be your focal point. All right, I can concede the likelihood of God if there were no other explanation for morals, but many people do pose plausible ideas for the birth of standards. Yes, they do, my friend. They do it all the time. The general explanation is commonly nicknamed the Wolfpack Theory. The theory goes like this. A long time ago, society learned that in order to survive, it would be mutually beneficial for people to treat one another with consideration. Laws were introduced in the event that some individuals did not wish to reciprocate. In other words, mere convenience is mistakenly called morality. It's not that I sense any inherent value in human beings. It's just that I treat you well in the hopes that you will do the same to me. The conscience is a habitual system of thoughts derived from the wolf pack. All right, now this theory can be easily tested. First of all, those who appeal to the explanation frequently do so in the name of relativism for the purpose of excusing some alleged sins. They're already in discussions with Christians or they're in discussions with other people about what is right and what is wrong, and they claim that morality is not even real. They say, since morality isn't real, I'm entitled to develop my own rules. Therefore, you have no right to judge my actions. Did you hear those words? You have no right to judge my actions. But if it is wrong for me to judge, then there is such a thing as wrong. With the same breath in which morality is questioned, morality is confirmed. I went through this one time. I was teaching a seminar called A Credible Case for Christianity. This was out at UCSB. We did an open Q&A time afterwards. One guy really agitated. He says, "I don't agree with a word you're saying. This is a bunch of baloney. There's no such thing as God. There's no such thing as a conscience from God. What we mistakenly call the conscience is just the fact that we want to be happy. We want to survive. I don't owe you anything. I treat you a certain way because I want you to treat me a certain way." He's going on and on and on with the wolf pack theory. He wasn't using that term, but that's what he was arguing, the wolf pack theory. Finally, these were the magic words. He waves his finger and he says, "And you've got no right to come in here judging us. I said, oh, so in other words, it's wrong for me to judge you. He says, that's right. I said, then there is such a thing as right and wrong. Yes, no, wait. Now, here's another problem with the Wolfpack theory. Frequently, people do convenient things at other people's expense. They still feel guilty. Where did the guilt come from if self-interest and convenience are supposedly the whole reason we even have standards to begin with? It's easy to talk about the cavemen and the origin of laws and the pacts that the original societies made, but the truth is, your life is the only one you've ever experienced. I, too, only have the experiences of my own life with which to decide what is right and what is wrong. Let me give you an example. Supposing you were undercharged $10 by the cashier at a grocery store. You were paying in cash. You weren't using a credit card. You know that it will not be discovered until the end of the day when they total the register. You will not be caught. You can get away with this. By the time you discover what happened, you have gotten away with it. What is the convenient thing to do? The convenient thing to do is to keep the money. Naturally, of course. But would this decision make you feel guilty? If so, how do you explain the guilt? Oh, Bob, brainwashing could explain the guilt. It may be that people feel bad for simply acting contrary to the way they were brought up. My friends, people who ask for evidence of a God usually consider themselves to be free thinkers, and I agree with them. I'll pay them that compliment. This sudden about-face insinuation that they are actually brainwashed is most interesting. Because, you see, the person talking to me is the one who's claiming that somebody else was brainwashed. But if he's trying to tell me that he doesn't believe his conscience came from God, he's also claiming that he, too, is just a victim of brainwashing because he knows that he feels bad about doing certain things, and he's trying to just figure out why he's feeling that way. Like I said, it's a sudden about-face. After all, once we realize we were brainwashed, we are not brainwashed anymore, according to any definition of brainwashing I've ever heard. For this reason, we should be able now to dismiss the voice of our conscience and sleep well at night. Try to imagine yourself keeping that money from the grocery store without guilt. The guilt should not be there. Supposedly, you were just brainwashed into believing that it is wrong to rip people off, and you now have risen above such a delusion. Yeah, but Bob, some people do commit crimes without any feelings of remorse. Yes, they do. And there's a name for such people. We call them psychopaths, implying that there is something terribly wrong with their minds. A psychopath is one with a warped or broken conscience. Calling something broken is not the same as implying that it doesn't really exist. The very label, psychopath, demonstrates that people really do see the conscience as something genuine but malfunctioning in a particular case. Likewise, some are born without an ability to walk. But we don't take that to mean that legs are only imaginary. All right, but Bob, many who have a working conscience, working as you want to put it, many of them still live immoral lives. My friends, all of us do. None of us live up to the conscience very well. We do a horrible job. That is the greatest argument that we didn't invent our moral standards, that we didn't invent our conscience. If we were going to invent something, wouldn't we invent something we could live up to better? Something we liked? I like being selfish. Why would I invent a conscience telling me I shouldn't be selfish the way I want to be? Ever since the traceable beginnings of history, the world has known war, crime, greed, hatred, bloodshed. Oh, our technology has improved, but our nature is barbaric as ever. For a while, it was popular to believe that our species was evolving into a more civilized, compassionate being. The Nazi Holocaust, smack in the middle of our modernized 20th century, obliterated this fantasy. It made Nero's Rome look like a picnic by comparison. People representing every range of career, personality, age, and social class perform deeds that stun the world. Doctors, attorneys. The world should not have been shocked. When the pressure is turned on, man's true nature erupts to the surface like deadly molten lava. People experience a wickedness which they never thought possible. Those who live in a peaceful environment can easily submerge this evil side, but the evil remains. Even in everyday life, we see people making selfish, callous decisions all the time, while the conscience tells us not to behave that way. This suggests that the conscience is coming from some entity outside of ourselves. All right, but Bob, if the conscience is coming from God, how come different societies produce different morals? You're absolutely right, my friend. Different societies do produce different morals, and I understand that at this moment that looks like a flat contradiction to my argument, but it's not. And I will show you how that does not contradict a word I said next time on The Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show podcast is a production of Bob Siegel and Cross Global Media. Visit us online and subscribe to the show at cgmradio.com/Bob.